District of the State of Texas, City of Austin, is now in session.
Good morning, please be seated.
Good morning.
We apologize for the late start this morning, and good to see you all. Welcome to the Third Court of Appeals, also known as the TCPA Court of Appeals. We have two cases for oral argument this morning. We'll go ahead and jump right in. I'd call for any announcements from the attorneys in both cases. I see our lawyers in Amini versus Spicewood Springs Animal Hospital are present this morning.
J.C. Morris, counsel for appellant, Nima Bibi.
Mr. Morris.
Robert Tyman, counsel for Kelly, Dr. Bilat and Arya, and Spicewood Springs Animal Hospital.
Very well. And then after you all finish up, we'll have Seton Family Hospitals versus White. You have them this morning.
Your Honor, Diane Faust here on behalf of the hospital.
Morning, Ms. Faust.
Scott Fischazzo for the interdictors, and I'll be handling argument for Mr. Breen as well as for the plaintiffs.
We appreciate you taking over for Mr. Breen.
Good
to see you all this morning. As you know, we have a time warning system. When the yellow light comes on, you have 2 minutes left in your designated time. When the red light comes on, you need to find a stopping point and look to the court if you need to go further. By way of housekeeping, anybody in the audience has a cell phone, pager, or other device that might go off and distract the litigants, now would be a good time to go ahead and turn it off. And with that, we'll hear from the attorneys in the Amini case. For purposes of the audio recording that we keep, I'll go ahead and call the case into the record. Cause number 18-272CV, and we can proceed on that. Mr. Morris.
May it please the court, my name is J.T. Morris. I'm counsel for defendant appellant Nima Amini. He's with us today in the courtroom. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors. This case is about a textbook slap suit. I know this court has heard a lot of TCPA appeals over the past few years, but this is one that squarely fits into the stated purpose of the TCPA. Here we have plaintiffs who sued Mr. Amini after he spoke out, including to City of Austin officials, about matters of public concern, including the excessive barking noise and trash collection noise from plaintiff's vet and animal boarding facility, the effect that excessive noise had on Mr. Amini and his residential community that was next door to the plaintiff's facility, and whether or not that noise, at least in part, was a result of plaintiff's noncompliance with their legal obligations. Plaintiffs sued Mr. Amini despite taking voluntary measures to stop some but not all of the noise, vindicating his voice concerns. This is precisely the sort of lawsuit that the Texas Citizens Participation Act is intended to stop in its tracks. That's why Mr. Amini is before the court this morning, respectfully asking that it reverse denial by operation of law of his motion to dismiss under the TCPA and remand for an award of his reasonable attorney's fees and deterrent sanctions.
One of the reasons you all are here this morning is because we are sort of interested in the aspect of what happens when you have an amended pleading that takes the TCPA-related claim off the table. What's left of the TCPA motion to dismiss, and how does that affect?
Okay. Sure, Your Honor, and I think we can start with this court's decision in Morins v. Kleinhans Gruber Law Firm, in which it said that a non-suit of a claim made after the TCPA motion is served does not abrogate the affirmative claim for relief from the TCPA motion. That's the claim for attorney's fees and sanctions. You see other courts across Texas adopting the same reasoning. Rauhauser versus McGibney from the Second Court of Appeals, the prestigious Pets case from the Houston Court of Appeals, all saying essentially a plaintiff can't avoid the TCPA simply by non-suiting a claims, particularly where, as in the case here, the allegations are based on the same set of facts. When you look at the second amended petition, which is the only amended petition they filed after the TCPA, they say in paragraph 15, and I'll quote, Your Honors, Amini repeatedly made known his displeasure concerning the dog noises and demanded they be stopped. So the Second Amendment petition is still based on those communications about a matter of public concern and those communications sent to Austin City officials about the noise. So it's still within the scope of the TCPA motion. And so I would submit to the court that also it would take the teeth out of the TCPA to allow a plaintiff to simply amend around a TCPA motion when the core of the allegations are the same, because it would create essentially a perverse incentive. A plaintiff could come, bring allegations, force the defendant to spend tens of thousands of dollars to file a TCPA motion, and then non-suit and walk away. And that would be antithetical to the purpose of the TCPA, which is to provide a a fast way for a plaintiff whose expressive rights have been attacked to dismiss a case without having to endure taking on significant legal fees and defending himself.
Does the TCPA protect communications that are harassing in nature or made in bad faith or the like?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I would point the court to two cases. First is the Supreme Court's recent decision from last year in Adams v. Starside Construction. There you had sort of a similar situation, although the communications were much more serious in nature. You had a homeowner making complaints about certain things that the subdivision developer was doing. I think, you know, the Supreme Court said he was complaining about cutting trees down and generally making life miserable for the residents of that subdivision. In those complaints, he had accused the subdivision of engaging in felonious conduct. I believe one of the facts from that case was he had threatened to shoot people. The Supreme Court said that doesn't matter. Whether or not the complaints, the communications are colorful, false, made by a disgruntled resident with an axe to grind, that's not the question, at least for the first prong of the TCPA analysis, whether the TCPA applies. It may be relevant to the second prong as to whether the plaintiffs can provide a prima facie showing for the elements of their claim.
Well, don't we have, since this case was overruled by operation of law, correct?
Yes.
So don't we have to go, even if we get to the first prong, that the TCPA applies? Don't we then have to, and I guess that's my question, which is why would it not be a prima facie case if you have somebody who is threatening to come to your neighborhood or your street address in the middle of the night and cause trouble?
Well, yes, to answer your first question, absolutely. It's de novo review, so we have to look at both prongs of the TCPA analysis here. In terms of the second prong, Your Honor, we need to look first at the causes of action here. We have tortious interference with contract. And if we're talking about what plaintiffs have deemed thuggish, threatening communications, none of those communications deal with tortious interference. And again, the court can deal with that easily because there's no clear and specific evidence of damages. Moving on to Spicewood Springs' business disparagement claim, no clear and specific evidence of damages. That's an essential element. The court can get rid of that claim, and the trial court should dismiss that claim as a result of no damages. So all that's left is the private nuisance claims. Private nuisance, as the Supreme Court set forth in the Crosstex opinion, concerns substantial harm, not trifling annoyances, not trifling interferences with property. Here we have an email that Dr. Bignara has said, Mr. Amini said, in which Mr. Amini said, next time this excessive trash noise happens, I'm going to come to your street on your house, I'm gonna honk my horn in the middle of the night. So you can get a taste of what I've been dealing with this for the past 2 years.
We've gotten a taste, I think.
Yeah. So, Your Honor, one, I think as a matter of law, I'm not aware of any case that holds that an email can be a private nuisance, that an email can be a substantial interference with property, use of property. As this court said in the Seraphine versus Blunt case and recognized, nuisance usually deals with odors, sounds, lights. How an email does that, I'm not sure, and plaintiffs have provided no case to support that theory. But you don't even have to get to the legal aspects of it. I think you can just look at the plaintiff's failure to provide clear and specific evidence that that email was a substantial interference. When you look at Dr. Bignara's affidavit, all it has is the conclusory allegations, the bare statements of opinion that the Supreme Court in Lipsky said cannot sustain the plaintiff's burden of clear and specific evidence. He simply says, well, I was interfered with. I felt annoyed. He doesn't say, for example, I felt like I couldn't sleep in my own home because of these emails, or I couldn't play with my kids outside because of Mr. Amini's emails. There's none of that. That's the sort of clear specific evidence under the Lipsky standard that plaintiffs would have had to put forward to meet their burden on private nuisance. The same goes for their obligation to provide clear and specific evidence of unreasonable discomfort and annoyance. Again, conclusory allegations, Dr. Bignara's affidavit, and then Mr. Corral, the employee of the animal hospital's affidavit, simply says, I felt annoyed, I felt afraid, but you don't see things as, for example, my employees were not able to come into work. We felt like we couldn't even take the dogs outside because Mr. Amini, we thought he was lurking out there. There's no specificity about the who, the what, the how about the interference or about the unreasonable annoyance or discomfort.
And how does that line of thought play into whether there's a matter of public concern at issue?
I think you go back, Your Honor, again to the Starside case and then also the 12th Court of Appeals decision in Garten v. Shiloh Partners. In the Starside case, again, you had those communications about the sub-developer cutting down trees, making life miserable for the residents of the community. The Supreme Court said, well, even though these might be colorful complaints, they're still about a matter of public concern because they relate to the health and safety and community well-being of that subdivision. Noting, in the court in Starside noted the particular characteristics of an HOA-run subdivision lends itself to being a matter of public concern. Similarly, in the Garten v. Shiloh Partners case out of the 12th Court of Appeals, I would note one, I think that court made a very persuasive observation that the definition of communication under the TCPA does not distinguish between socially acceptable forms of speech and socially unacceptable forms of speech. There you had, again, a homeowner complaining about drainage and erosion problems caused by the subdivision developer. She couched her communications by calling the subdeveloper's employees spawns of Satan and tools of the devil. She forced a number of in-person confrontations that were aggressive. But the Court of Appeals said, in that case, those were still part of her communications about a matter of public concern because that drainage and erosion problems related to health and safety of the community as well as economic and community well-being. And because even though she called them spawns of Satan and children of the devil, it was still part of her effort to voice her concerns about those health and safety and community well-being issues. So it was a matter of public concern. Again, Your Honor, there's no distinguishing in the TCPA between nice, civil, and uncivil. There's no distinguishing or limiting in the TCPA that communications can't be persistent or frequent, as they must be. The First Amendment recognizes that. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And I think the First Amendment makes, neither the First Amendment or the TCPA says, well, we're not going to protect frequent speech as long as it relates to a matter of public concern, which it does here. If the court looks at Starside and looks at Garten, that's very clear. I just want to make one more point, Your Honor, in that when you look at the three petitions here, the allegations in the three petitions, and you look at the affidavits that the plaintiffs submitted in the trial court, it's very clear that but for Mr. Amini's communications on a matter of public concern, and I will remind the court that those included communications to Austin City officials, that but for those communications, this lawsuit doesn't exist. And so plaintiffs' allegations and their affidavits demonstrate that their lawsuit and all of their claims are based on Mr. Amini's right to petition and his right to exercise his free speech as defined under the TCPA. Mr. Amini has met his burden. Going on, I think I've addressed this pretty substantially. Simply put, plaintiffs did not meet their burden. Again, I think the court can look at the business disparagement claims and the tortious interference claims that were filed initially by Spicewood Springs Animal Hospital and look and see there's no clear and specific evidence of damages. The only thing they've alleged as damages was the voluntary expenditures they made on the sound wall in 2014. But all of the communications they complain about came after the wall was built. So it's illogical to complain about communications and say, well, these communications damaged us for expenditures we incurred 3 years prior. There's no clear and specific evidence of damage. That alone shows they did not meet their burden on the business disparagement or the tortious interference claim. And in addition, for the tortious interference claim, as the Court of Appeals in Houston recognized in the John Moore Services case, where you have the TCPA burden, the plaintiff has to carry his burden of clear specific evidence, and there's no clear and specific evidence of a breach. That alone shows they did not meet their burden to avoid dismissal. Plaintiffs adduced no evidence of a breach here. That's another reason why the court should reverse on the tortious interference claim. I think I've substantially covered why they did not produce any clear and specific evidence to make a prima facie showing for either their private nuisance claims. Unless the panel has any more questions, I will sit down and yield the floor to my friend.
Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Thank you.
Morning, Mr. Kleinman.
May it please the court, Robert Kleinman for the appellees, Spicewood Springs Animal Hospital, and Dr. Barack Benaria. I think it's important to get a little bit of context here before we jump in. And this is a case where 5 years ago, somebody buys a condominium next to a good-sized animal hospital that's been there for 30 years. And it's adjacent to it, and, you know, sure enough, they're bothered by dogs barking. Mm. So the owner of the hospital spent $25,000 to address the individual's concerns, and the individual says, thanks, this is a really big improvement. Then he's still unhappy with it, the sound later, and he tries to sell his condominium to the Spicewood Springs Animal Hospital and the owner, and the 20% above market value is not enough for him. He has to go higher. And that's where the context and the anger of this comes in. Now, the TCPA requires, there's two things. It needs to be protected speech, and we have a difference about what protected speech comprises, and it needs to involve a matter of public concern, and we also differ there. And a threat is a threat. Just because a communication is made using words does not make it protected speech. Most people are forced to rely on words to make threats because they don't have the money to put a horse's head, you know, in their opponent's bed or something like that. In this case, where Mr. Romini used language to communicate, he had acquired Dr. Benari's home address gratuitously, well, not gratuitously, he was trying to communicate, and told him, and I just want to correct for the record, Mr. Morris said that he honked his horn. That's not part of the quote. Mr. Romini's exact quote was, I'm going to come over to your house in the middle of the night and give you and your neighbors a taste of what I've been dealing with. You've been warned. You've been warned. All right. It's clear that, you know, he's trying to communicate something, and what he's trying to communicate is, you know, do it my way or suffer the consequences. And it's not like this is an isolated incident. On October 2nd, 2017, Mr. Romini pings Dr. Benaria's phone something like at 4:56 a.m. 11 times in the space of like a minute or two to wake him up and sow fear. And he's not using words, but clearly the purpose is to sow fear and intimidate him. The list goes on. He emailed Dr. Benaria's employees.
So as we talk about these things, it would be helpful if you could put these for us in the context of where the line is. I mean, we know that the TCPA is not concurrent with what we think of as normal First Amendment jurisprudence. Where is the state these days after the recent amendments as far as where the line is on these items of speech?
Well, that's a great question. The TCPA is the Texas Citizens Participation Act, and it's there to encourage discourse. That's the whole idea. It's not the Texas Citizens Intimidation Act. Intimidation terminates discourse, and that's where you get the public and private thing. This has nothing to do with a larger issue like a bunch of a neighborhood or development that's been affected or anything else.
We may think that's correct or not, but we're well beyond there, I think, in the jurisprudence of the TCPA. I mean, it's been found to be much more broad than any of us dreamed of to begin with. Where's the line now, and why has he crossed it in the speech that shouldn't be protected?
Let me just go. I think that I'm saying that this isn't speech, that at some point I disagree that the TCPA does not trump the First Amendment, and that when speech becomes conduct, it's no longer protected speech. The TCPA only protects protected speech. For example, Connie Heyer is an Austin real property attorney who represented the HOA. He was taking that direction, going after her. I thought she had a better take on it than anyone. I'm going to quickly read from what she wrote and then quote the appellant. She wrote to him, "Your intent to continue harassing the association and its agents is evident from your past actions and even from your printed words conveyed in a recent email to me." Quote, this is what she received. "Your email is not a sufficient response and has not adequately addressed my concern. I will continue to email you and the board until I receive an update with corrective measures or an action plan. I will also continue visiting the granted properties in person until I receive an adequate response in writing." I do not believe that conduct designed to intimidate and interfere with other people's lives can be, falls under the free speech or even the First Amendment, but certainly not the purpose of the TCPA, which is participation in discourse. It's not a license to harass people. And that's what.
I'm resisting the urge to ask about your TCPA motion to dismiss his TCPA motion.
Yes.
Because I don't think that's, is that not on appeal? You're not appealing.
No, we're not appealing that.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
And that would be fun to talk about, but I'll let you go.
Okay. And that wasn't gamesmanship either. That was due process. I just want you to know. I mean, we have the statute itself is so crazy.
I wasn't implying that it was gamesmanship. It's just an interesting issue.
No, I know you weren't. You were very polite about it. But that when it was filed, I was aware that that could come up. But I think it goes to show the weaknesses of the TCPA. And, you know, our client is entitled to due process. He should be able to take advantage of the law.
Mr. Kleinman, can I direct you to Chief Justice Rowe's question of Mr. Morris about what is the effect of non-suiting a claim, and where do you're arguing, if I understand correctly, that once you non-suit a TCPA claim, then you cannot, once you non-suit a claim, which has a motion to dismiss under the TCPA, it almost becomes moot.
Right. I don't think, again, that the TCPA, I don't understand how it, is superior to Texas Rules of Civil Procedure 62 and 63. Again, this is a due process right. People have a right to amend their petitions. Stripping them of that is, I don't see any basis for that, and I'm not quite sure how this snare, this bear trap, came into existence.
Well, I guess we're not really saying he doesn't have the right to. We're saying that you could still be liable for attorney's fees that may have been triggered under the prior pleading. Isn't that right?
That's the bear trap. So, I mean, that's the whole point.
Like under 91A, right. You could amend. But is the TCPA different?
Well, and didn't the legislature's very specific under 91A that if you dismiss, non-suit by a certain amount of time, then yes. Mm. But if you don't, I don't know if it's 3 days, you don't. So they didn't include that in the TCPA. So why isn't that indicative that we shouldn't treat it the same?
I don't want to misstate 91A. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not going to say. But if a case survives, it's one thing also, though, amending is one thing, because it means that the purpose of the lawsuit continues beyond whatever, the initial TCPA thing was. And I think that if a lawsuit is dismissed in its entirety by the plaintiff, that you could distinguish it in that way, and that it might be appropriate to apply the attorney's fees. But here, this case is still going forward. In fact, we filed a motion for summary judgment, and we wanted to move forward in discovery.
I'll have Mr. Morris answer the same question. But so as we sit here today, all we have is the issue of attorney's fees under the prior pleading status. And then under the new pleading, all we have is this nuisance claim, correct?
I think we have two claims under the new pleading, I think. I just have to find it in my notes, sorry. I'm pretty sure there are two claims are live. Private nuisance, private nuisance, and both to Dr. Benaria and to Spicewood Springs Animal Hospital.
Okay.
All right, going beyond the speech of it, we have to get into the public concern, because that's a requirement of the TCPA for it to apply. Private grievances don't. And let me just go back to get back on track here. One second. Okay. All right. Mr. Amini filed a mountain of complaints with every city inspector, noise, animals, anything he could do. And they went out there 6 or 7 times, and every single claim was labeled unjustified. So I think the only matter of public concern here is how somebody can use their private agenda to get the city to spend its money and waste resources to help them. when clearly they know and they've had their due process and they've looked and it's been inspected and their claims have been denied. I think that that's public concern. Saying that an individual who buys a condo next to an animal hospital that's been there for 30 years and no one else is complaining and he's the one, how can that be a real matter of public concern, especially with the backdrop that he's simultaneously negotiating the sale of his condominium to the owner of Spicewood Springs Animal Hospital? In that way, you could look at these things as leverage, the fact that he's calling the city and making the owner sweat because people are showing up every day, not every day, but they're showing up six or seven times. And that goes back to Mr. Morris's thing about damages, that I think that for any business owner to have to go through having the city look down on them or look at them and scrutinize their zoning or their water or whatever, their garbage, six or seven times is a real burden, and it intimidates the employees. Speaking of which, I was going to say that when Mr. Amini climbs onto an adjacent structure on a morning and yells at one of Dr. Benari's employees that they're breaking the law, he's clearly doing that to interfere with the employee. They provided a DVD of it. I urge you to watch it. I think it's very telling. The dogs are very quiet until Mr. Amini starts yelling at him. This is a private grievance.
I guess in light of like Seraphine and some of these other cases where all it takes is a French drain 2 inches over a boundary line, and apparently that's public concern. I mean, it's pretty broad.
Well, I think that actually the case out of the supplemental authority, Stroud versus Clearview Energy. This is, I think, I don't know whether it was influenced by the purpose of the new law in effect or whatnot, but it says that, look, things are different. If you're going to, it actually has to really mean public concern. I'm looking for their exact language, but it's, everything has been assumed to be a matter of public concern up until now. It's been taken as a granted. And I think the issue is a genuine matter of public concern, but that's a good case to look at. We should mention we have motions for sanctions pending, and this is the second motion for sanctions I've ever filed in my life. I don't know if you guys looked at it or read it, but I think that it's relevant because I think it's clear from the record that Mr. Morris took advantage of a clerk's error to gain an unfair advantage, and I think he misled the court, and I think his letters are pretty clear about that. And as a result, I don't think it's right that he then try and seek the power of the court, to write this. I think it should be denied just as that basis, that you forfeit your right when you do that. I'm not a judge. I don't know what the rules are, but that was... especially in light of the fact that the DVD I mentioned before, the clerk from the lower court inadvertently omitted that. And when we were asked about it, we said, of course, it's part of the record. And then this trying to get the Court of Appeals to believe that because there was a scanning error or something, that the record without our affidavits should be the record before this court. I mean, I don't get it. I don't think it's right. Well, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about you. The appellant alleges that your First Amendment claims for vagueness and overbreath are waived because you didn't bring up in the trial court. Can you address that?
Yeah, I think that I didn't address that in anything because I think the legislature has already made it my case there. What does pertaining to mean? I looked at the statute when we got sued, and I heard like, boy, this is... The words vague went through my head and broad, and I felt like it was in con law. And I said, this is unconstitutional. That literally happened. The fact that we're talking about things, and you had mentioned, this thing is so vague that we think it is unconstitutional. It denies due process, and it also For several grounds, but yes, we don't think that pertaining to how can that be something to give fair notice to Texans and judges and lawyers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons when we mention, whenever TCPA comes up, judges are just have a visceral reaction.
Sorry.
Understandably. So, and I think that that's why the legislature amended it. Does it go far enough? I don't know. But the fact that they did, there's a reason they changed the law. There's a reason they took that out. Thank you.
Sir. Rebuttal, Mr. Morris.
I just want to address the sanctions motion real quick. I think if you look at our briefing, it's pretty clear everything we did was in good faith. We were the first ones, actually, in our principal merits brief to bring up the issue of the affidavits that were missing. They didn't attempt to correct it until all the briefing was completed here. There was no attempt to mislead this court. I just want to make that clear. and also, Mr. Chief Justice, you brought up the new amendments that went into effect on September 1st. I think we're still operating under the old version of the TCPA, since that was the version under which Mr. Amini filed his TCPA motion. Second, moving on to this issue of threatening communications matter.
On that issue, you may want to submit some sort of letter brief after the fact to tell us whether those were clarifications or changes to the law. I've not seen anything that says that we don't apply the law as is.
Okay.
As we're deciding it.
I will submit a letter brief after oral argument, Your Honor. Thank you. On matter of public concern.
I'm sure you'll want to respond to his letter brief, and you have permission to do that to the extent.
Thank you.
I mean, keep in mind, brief.
One pager, Your Honor.
Great.
On matter of public concern, this is not a private dispute. You need to just look at the Starside case from the Texas Supreme Court and the Garten v. Shiloh Partners case from the 12th Court of Appeals to make clear this is not a private dispute. The record makes that clear as well. You have a declaration from one of Mr. Amini's neighbors, Hippolito Sarabia, describing the noise. He was affected by it. You have Mr. Amini's emails telling Dr. Bignara that at least two neighbors have moved. And you have the City of Austin officials, as late as February 2018, telling Mr. Amini, okay, we needed to look into the scope of this zoning ordinance and see really whether or not the animal hospital is operating inside of it. All those, in addition to the law, show that this is a matter of public concern. It's not some private dispute. As far as the amendments, the amendment of a pleading to get around the TCPA issue, I think the cases I cited earlier, Morin's, McGibney, Prestigious Pets, explain why the claim for affirmative relief outlives a non-suit or otherwise a dropping of a claim. But I also know it's not a bear trap, because in all these cases, the plaintiff still has the ability to show that even if he had kept the claim, he still has the right to show clear and specific evidence and make that prima facie showing to avoid imposition of attorney's fees. The issue is here, they haven't done that for either any of their claims, business disparagement, tortious interference, or their private nuisance claims.
So as far as our snapshot, though, we have the attorney's fee issue before us that we looked at the prior pleadings, but then in the current pleadings, we essentially are having to run another TCPA analysis on whether it applies to this private nuisance, which seems to be the only claims left?
I don't think that's necessarily the case, Your Honor, because the TCPA says legal action includes a lawsuit. And as the Supreme Court said in the Hirsch v. Tatum recent decision, we take a holistic look at the pleadings. So if the pleadings alone show that their lawsuit was based on the protected communications made in furtherance of one of those three expressive rights, that's enough. We stop there. So I would submit to the court, all you need to do is look at paragraph 15 in the Second Amendment petition, where they say Amini, made numerous complaints and demanded that the barking noise be stopped. That links back. And so under the TCPA, we can say the allegations and affidavits show that their lawsuit as a whole was based on Mr. Meany's exercise of his expressive rights.
So could we end up with a situation, though, where the actual dismissal is only as to this public nuisance claim, and what if it's not something that's subject to TCPA or survives that analysis?
Sure. Even the dismissed tortious interference and business disparagement claim my understanding is they still are have to be formally dismissed by the trial court. So again, plaintiffs have had the opportunity, even though they abandoned them, to show that they would escape the attorney's fees and sanctions provision by putting on clear and specific evidence of those. Because they haven't, on remand, what would be, I think, the practical outcome is the trial court would enter a dismissal both as to the private nuisance claims and the abandoned claims, much like a trial court has to enter an order of non-suit after a notice of non-suit is filed. lastly, Your Honor, they had brought up the Stroud case. That case was about an ex-employee employment dispute, very obviously not germane to the situation here. I think it has little relevance. And finally, Your Honor, just in conclusion, I would point the court to Starside. I would point the court to Garten. Those cases make clear that the TCPA applies here because the communications were on a matter of public concern and they were made to Austin City officials. So they fall within both Mr. Muni's exercise of his right to free speech as well as his right to petition. And for the reasons I stated for my opening argument and in our briefing, they've provided no clear and specific evidence on damages, and they've provided no clear and specific evidence on substantial interference with their property or unreasonable annoyance or discomfort as to their private nuisance claims. Unless the panel has any questions, I'll conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Morris, Ms. Kleiman, thank you both for an interesting case. Always fun when somebody can bring us a new twist on the TCPA. You all can be
dismissed. Or dog barking.
Or dog barking. You all can be dismissed and the case will be submitted. We'll go ahead and call up the attorneys in the next case.